You're listening to TFM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
Hey, everyone. I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Hello and welcome to Literary Treks, TFM's Star Trek books and comics show. I am just one of your hosts, Casey Pettit, and with me, as he always is the wonderful Jonathan Cohn. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, it's been another month. We are working our way through the Gateway Saga, working our way through some other things. We got some good news to talk about.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's a good gonna be a good episode, I think, and a good, yes, lots of good news, and just rehashing old news just so we're all aware of how much good news we've got right now. Well, before we get into the news, I want to tell everybody how to get in touch with us. You can find all our shows by going to our website, trek.fm. Follow us on X and Instagram at TrekFM. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. And while you're there, join our listeners-only group, the Babel Conference. Just go to the Facebook search field and type B-A-B-E-L, and it should come right up. We also have a dedicated Goodreads group for Literary Treks. Join us there, and you can see the books we've read and even what's coming up next. If you'd like to support the network, please go to patreon.com/trekfm, where you can select from any number of tiers. And if you have a show you really enjoy, you can be an associate producer like myself and Greg Rosier are for Literary Treks. And lastly, please, please leave us a star rating and a written review wherever you get your podcasts. It is great for us for the feedback, and it also helps others find the show somehow, and we appreciate that. So if you like us, let others know. Well, Jonathan, why don't you lead us in with some of that great news that we've got.
So we have a new Star Trek book to talk about, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, The Making of the Classic Film. This is by John Tenuto and Maria Jose Tenuto. And I'm very excited for this because it should give a lot of interesting background on the making of the film. And did they do any other behind-the-scenes books?
They did the Star Trek II.
Yeah.
Making of the classic film.
That's right.
I think they might have done some of the other Titan kind of coffee table books. But
they need to complete the trilogy.
But
with,
now they need
the
to complete
one.
The trilogy. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to them and maybe pick their brains and see where this is going. It seems like they're starting a trend here.
Yeah. I really find the behind-the-scenes stuff fascinating. The question is if they'll be able to really go like fully behind the scenes and really give all the info, or if they'll be like hampered on what they are and aren't allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
Given that it's like 40, 35 years old, yeah. I'm guessing that they'll have a lot more freedom.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, they always do a great job, and, they've obviously proven their worth with Star Trek II and to get the Star Trek III books, so I can only imagine that this one's going to be just as good, if not better.
Yeah. And then we also have a new Dayton Ward book that's coming out in February, and that's going to be To Defy Fate, which is going to be a Picard novel. We do not yet have the official cover art, but we do know that that's coming out, so that'll be it's coming right on the heels of two pretty much back-to-back, not with in October we have Ring of Fire, and December we have Identity Theft, so a two-month break, and then a two-month break until we have the new To Defy Fate from Dayton, which I'm excited to talk to Dayton again. We can let him out of the green room for that.
Yes.
One.
It's always nice when we can let him out of the green room.
Yes. And hopefully this means that we're getting another one in April. Keep the 2 month, one every 2 months going.
Well, that would be nice. Yeah. We can always use more Star Trek books. And, yeah. You know, we've got a list of books of old stuff in the back catalog of Star Trek that we want to read. But you know what? If there's new stuff coming out, we'll take that every time.
Every time.
Yes.
And then you have some comics to bring up for us.
Yes, we do have a few comics to talk about this time. We're getting close to the end of the Star Trek Defiant run. And anybody who reads the comics as they come out know that the Defiant run ended a while ago, as we're recording this in August of 2025. But we're catching up. So we've got a four-issue arc that kind of ends the Defiant... It's kind of the end of the Defiant story proper, and it's called No Old Warriors. And then this, along with the Star Trek ones that we read last time, lead into the lore war, which is kind of the big culminating arc for the two series.
Yeah.
This, I have to say, I mean... I think all of the Star Trek and the Star Trek Defiant comics have been pretty hit or miss as we've gone through them. And unfortunately, I feel like this one was a bit of a miss for me. It was, I mean, it did its best to tie up some loose ends, which I don't necessarily know if they needed to. Like, it depends on where they're going in lore war, but... you know, like, there's this weird story arc where B'Elanna and the Defiant... you know, there's like Worf told him to head to Earth before he went off with Alexander. But they decide they're going to go take down some of the self-replicating minefields that were set up in the Gamma Quadrant during the Dominion War, as kind of a humanitarian thing. And that story just kind of fizzles a little bit. It's just kind of there. The main arc of this story is really Alexander going through a, ritual, you know, Klingon thing to get his honor back. And I mean, it's kind of a nice story because it's a good Worf Alexander story, but it you know, and Alexander even kind of helps redefine some of the Klingon customs as far as, like, you know, showing compassion and mercy and things like that that Klingons wouldn't necessarily do but still are honorable traits for a warrior to have.
But
you know, and he even has the opportunity to kill Kalos II, who was all the way at the beginning of these comic series, you know, in the Day of Blood comics. And you know, it shows mercy, spoiler alert, but the comic's already multiple months old now, but you know, it shows mercy to Kalos, you know, and I kind of almost feel like we're gonna potentially see Kalos again, but we also know we're coming to the end of these ongoing series. But oddly too, the fourth issue of this comic took a complete right turn and just, like, or left turn or 180, or I don't even know what you want to say, and just went in a completely different direction anyway, with the Orion Nymeira. We're finding out that she's still alive, which, I'm going to be honest, I forgot she was supposed to be dead. But
a Star Trek comic in, like, its fourth issue of the arc going in a completely different direction.
I know.
I've never heard of this before. We just had this happen last month.
Right? Yeah. And so, well, and last month, I think we were supposed to have read these ones first, but...
still, it's still not...
Yeah, but, I mean, the one thing that the fourth issue here did is it did lead us into and kind of remind us of the things going on with the universes, or the multiverse or whatever. Everything's kind of collapsing and disappearing, and so she's kind of come back into that, as did Berlingoff Rasmussen, which I forgot that he had been brought in quite a while ago too. But basically we are to be continued right into the lore wars. So
right. And it's sad because, like the premise of the story of the Defiant being in a standoff with Section 31 and the Cardassians and having to liberate the people of the Arcanus. I mean, like, that should be an amazing story. Like, that sounds like a combination of some of David Mack's books.
Oh, yeah.
Some of his type stories. And I'm like, this should have been a fire book. And,
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, they just kind of that happens, yes, and they're in that standoff, and then they're on this planet in some bog, and then all of a sudden, the next time we come back to them, they're back on the ship because they were just kind of at a stalemate and agreed to go their separate ways, and it was like, well, that's a letdown, but mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's kind of the classic trying to do too much in too little time, and it felt like it almost kind of felt like at some point there was a story written, but they needed to fill out some pages.
Yep.
And we can't not have B'Elanna and the Defiant crew in this Defiant story. We can't just focus on Worf and Alexander. Like, so it actually made me wish that this was actually a 6-issue arc, just because like there was kind of more interesting things to explore there with like taking down these minefields and having Section 31 show up and all this stuff. So, and maybe there will be some things that come out in the lore war, but from the 4th issue, it kind of just doesn't really seem like that. So mm-hmm. We'll see next month, I guess. Well, speaking of lore war, should we go and talk about a Cold War?
Oh, I was wondering how you were going to make that.
Off the top of the old noggin.
I was trying to see the connection. I like it. Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about a Cold War.
Well, we have finally reached the point in the Gateways where we're actually, we've come to our second series that's not based on one of the Star Trek shows. We had the Challenger mm-hmm. book, which, you know, I think it's safe to say we're both fairly disappointed in. But, you know, New Frontier, I was kind of doing a little bit of research on this after I read the book, but it was actually Pocket Books' first time doing a series that had continuity. Like John Ordover, who was one of the editors at the time and one of the co-creators of New Frontier, had been interviewed. I think it might have been in the Voyages of the Imagination book, but basically saying that because there were still shows that were on the air, they were kind of their hands were tied as far as having continuity in the books, and so creating an original story like New Frontier actually allowed them to do that. And so, and I'm thinking, you know, within a few years we've got the post Deep Space Nine and
right.
You know, post Nemesis books, so kind of just feels like New Frontier itself had to have been what paved the way. You know,
oh, certainly.
For everything else.
But the difference, the key difference is New Frontier was a singular vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, New Frontier was Peter David's story. I think for maybe like he contributed to some short story collections mm-hmm. that included this as well, but it's not like there were other novelists really included. So I think he kind of paved the way with a single author doing a continuity. And then once Post Nemesis came, that was them opening it up to multiple authors and stuff, and they kept it going yeah. with Marco Palmieri and Margaret Clark and John J. Ordover for a time. But so you had read some of the New Frontier books before this?
Yeah, I think, I mean, years and years ago, I mean, well after they came out, but still a long time ago now, because, I mean, 1997 was when these books first started coming out, but, you know, probably in the early 2000s, I read probably the first 6 or maybe 8 of the books, as well as the Captain's Table New Frontier book, and this yeah. one, when I read the Gateways originally. But beyond that, like, I really haven't read much, so I was kind of, I mean, I was coming into this with some familiarity, like of some of the characters' backgrounds, but otherwise mm-hmm. it was pretty fresh for me.
Of course, I remembered Elizabeth Shelby. I mean,
yes.
Everybody who has, I feel like she's probably of the not main cast Star Trek characters you could get, she's like right below, even though she's in like 2 episodes,
right.
She's like, because of the 2 episodes she's in,
yeah.
she is like one of the most well-known side characters in Star Trek. And so I knew her going in, but I didn't know the other characters. And I think this was actually an excellent jumping in point, because it's all new characters,
mm-hmm.
but also you don't have to have read a lot with these guys. You can, it's a standalone kind of with Guts going on. And you know that, you know, Shelby and Calhoun just got married. She just became the captain of her own ship separate from him. Outside of that, yeah. they fill you, like everything else, they fill you in. So it worked yeah. great as a first timer.
Yeah.
You know what did not work great though?
What?
Opening the book on a post-sex scene. That was like the first chapter, just being them in bed. I was like, Peter, Come on, man. I thought we were past this. Are you still doing that? I soldiered through Imzadi.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I thought we were done with this, Peter. I thought you got it out of your system.
I don't know that Peter David ever got it out of his system, to be honest. Like, from what I know of his books, like, there's always something in there. But yeah, and I agree, though. I think that, yeah, he did a really good job. Like, I was able to pick it up, you know, again, with some familiarity and kind of immediately reminded of some of the characters. And actually, you know, what's funny about some of these characters, and our listeners who have read these are going to roll their eyes and say, I know, I've read all these before. But some of the original characters were actually created by Peter David still, but like back in the YA or the kids, whatever, like the Starfleet Academy novels mm-hmm. that he did. So like Zach Kebron, who's the security chief on the Excalibur, was like roommates with Worf at the Academy or something like that. And
nice.
I think Salida was there as well at the Academy, and there might have been one of the other ones, but we also have a couple of the very minor characters from Next Generation, like Dr. Salar. She was on Next Generation. Anyway, there's some familiar faces in there mixed in with the originals, but just usually like very background characters that he's flushed out. So, you know,
then you have a new character, Mr. Fetus.
Mr. Fetus.
Look, it was a funny enough name, but he milked that joke.
Oh,
and
it man.
Was so, and he went
to the bitter end.
He got into the bitter end with that joke, and I was like, okay, you are in danger of crossing a line with this. It was funny.
It was pretty funny. But
at the same time, I was like,
I will say it is one of those, like, there was that, and there was a couple other, like, even like Burgoyne's. Well, I guess that was kind of almost part of the Burgoyne storyline too, but just Burgoyne becoming the first officer and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, some of that stuff could have been lifted out as far as the Gateways story goes.
Right.
Like, could have been lifted out. And like, this was a very long book especially for these Gateways.
For a Gateways book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as the overall New Frontier arc, I imagine, I would hope anyways, that those types of storylines would be leading somewhere. So
yeah, we also had the character who she was she had been lifted out of her timeline, and she wanted to go back, and like that was her like excuse, like with the Gateways potentially.
Mm-hmm.
I found that fascinating.
Well, that character Emres or Mares or whatever.
Yeah, Emres. Yeah, I can't remember how to pronounce it,
but she's from the animated series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so her and Eryx, who is, like, I think he's a Triaxian or whatever. He's got three arms mm-hmm. and three legs or whatever. So those are both two characters from the animated series. So I thought that was, like, actually another pretty interesting thing for him to bring in and add these characters, because that's not something I really remembered at all. And now I'm kind of like, was this hinted at in a previous book somewhere? Like, I'm kind of curious, like, where, like, did he just want to bring these characters in? Do we even find out what they were doing at the time, you know, that they were brought forward, or is that from a different Peter David book or something? But like, I thought that was pretty interesting, because that's not something we've gotten it in, like, actually one of Greg Cox's books, Lost to Eternity, I think it was, where we've get a little bit of that kind of displaced persons kind of storylines, temporarily displaced.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked how he handled that, because you got Eryx, who just like goes with the flow and he's totally fine, but Mares is kind of beside herself and wants to try to get back because she doesn't know anything or anybody here. So that was an interesting take on the Gateways too, like the, just, you know, people are going to be out of place, kind of like the dog in the Voyager book,
right? Yeah. Although you were talking about how long this is, if you factor in not just the page length but also the fact that the font size was so much smaller, this is probably like two of those Voyager books.
Oh my gosh.
If Christy Golden wrote two books that were the same length, it would be about this size.
Yeah.
That just shows, I really would like to talk to I don't know if John Day Ordover would answer this, but I'd really be curious about the decision making behind how they planned that.
Yeah.
But the book did have some really interesting plotting, mm-hmm. because the whole plot around the Cold War, where there was these two alien species that had been from the same planet and had been separated, and now they're fighting each other again, and they normally wouldn't be able to, but yet, because the Gateway's technology gives them the opportunity to go and attack the other person. It's just, to me, it felt very prescient. Because obviously there have been certain conflicts that have been going along for a long time. So of course it doesn't matter when you're written, they're going to seem like these conflicts, but also especially with, like, you know, what we're going through with today, two in particular that are still fighting over the same area, and they both groups had dispersed and now have come back.
Yeah.
It's like, man, he really gets it. And he really did a good job of presenting a layered point of view with both groups. Like, I didn't particularly agree with either group.
Yeah.
But I still personally was more on the side of, you know, the little girl and her planet, because I empathized with the destruction of the royal family, which to me reminded me of the Romanovs from Russia, them all being executed. And then in the movie Anastasia, the daughter survives. In real life, she died with him. But in this book, it's the girl survives. And so I really empathize with them, but then they make some moves. Her general, you know, makes some moves, and I'm like, maybe I don't like them. Maybe Calhoun and Shelby should blow them up.
Yeah, I didn't actually make the Anastasia connection. That's really interesting. Because, yeah, like, especially at the very beginning of the book, it was hard not to kind of side with or empathize, you know, with her and that race, because of how... yeah, destructive and bloody and whatever, like, you know, that the Markanians just came through a gateway and just slaughtered everybody, you know, and then there was the one daughter that committed suicide because she did not want, like, she's like, no, you can't have my life. It's in my control or whatever. And it was just very sad. And
that's just the first chapter.
And that's just the first chapter. I mean, then, like, talk about starting with a bang. Holy crap. Like, it's, yeah. And I mean, I feel like, too, I mean, just from there, and once we start getting, because it's a while before we start getting the point of view of the other side, because even, like, you know, by the time the Aerons or whatever they're called, by the time they attack back, Shelby's already there and effectively, like, stops the attack, kind of, you know, mid-attack. I mean, so there was still an attack happening, but she interfered. And so, like, you know, from the Aerons' point of view, like, they didn't fully get their, you know, vengeance or anything. And, you know, it's not a fair fight or whatever. And it's, I don't know. But at that point, you know, seeing, like, and finally, like, learning what the conflict was and seeing, like, they've both got claims and they both feel a little silly to us, because it's like, well, they've been in a Cold War for 100 years and none of the people who are alive have ever even set foot on this planet that they're fighting over and or seen it or anything. And so it's it at some point it's kind of like, you know, obviously time doesn't forget, but, you know, you kind of sit there, like, you know, you're midway through the book going, that was never their home. Like, why are they doing this? But then, yeah, when you put it into today's context, or even in 2001's context when this came out, the conflict in the Middle East was still happening back then. And you know, it's been happening for centuries? I don't know, you know, like, and
well, if we're talking going all the way back to the Bible era, Isaac versus Ishmael, that's quite a ways back.
It's a little ways. Yeah.
So, you know, so, yeah, it's a very ever prescient story.
Yeah. And there's been interviews with, and again, I think it was with John Ordover, where he said, like, as far as he was aware, like, that particular conflict was not, this wasn't supposed to be an allegory to that. It was just, you know, I think this was supposed to just kind of be more of a generalized story, like, that just happens to have, I mean, I don't think Israel and Palestine, okay, we named them, but I don't think that's the only, I don't think that's the only one that, you know, like,
well,
that
probably
might be,
not,
might be, but the it, longest but lasting, the, but if, yeah, and it fits the bill here pretty closely, you know. Mm-hmm.
There was one part of the book that did confuse me, and that was when we had the Iconians show up, which was, they have the same name, but different genders.
Yeah.
And I started reading it, I legitimately thought I had messed up. I thought, did I totally not pay attention when that person showed up before? And also, wasn't he on the other planet? And I'm like, but now he's a she. And I was like, then I thought, is Peter David going in that direction? And I was like, surely not in 2001. Although he did have, you know, a pronoun thing with one of the characters going on. But that's a different story. But I was like, what? I wonder what's going on there. And then they're like, no, it's two characters with the same name that are both Iconians. And I was like, I get it now.
And they're unaware of each other, apparently.
Unaware of each other, right.
Yeah, that was interesting because I kind of had, that same feeling as you when the second one, like when we were introduced to the second one, because... I mean, it was pretty clear, and I feel like our kind of omniscient narrator, you know, third person narrator, you know, can be trusted, you know. So like when the first Smit, I think was the name.
Yeah, Smit, I think. SMYT.
Yeah, they're like, no, like, you know, this is the only one that I'm aware of, you know, like the only gateway like this. And they're like, well, then how did the other side come over? And it's like, well, that's a good question. I really don't know. And it's like, okay. And then we meet the other one. And I did have that same thing as you. I was like, oh, is it transporting back and forth? And oh, wait, is it changing its like gender or it's just like appearance or whatever? But then there was like one chapter, or there might have been a couple times where it did this, where it put like, like, I mean, effectively side by side, but like, you know, kind of on one on top of the other, like the exact same scene just happening on each of the planets. And so
right,
then it started occurring to me like, okay, these are two different beings. And I was at that point kind of like, maybe they are in cahoots and they are trying to play these planets together. But I was like, it was confusing, like in a good way. It was just a mystery, you know?
Yeah, it was. The culminating scene for me was the scene of the holodeck where they have the people from the Marcanians and the Aarons, and they have Shelby, and they have Calhoun, and then they have the girl, and they're all meeting together, and then Calhoun and Shelby start arguing.
Yeah.
it was so good. And the thing is, I think Peter David did a great job setting this up where he established that Calhoun does some things differently.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay. And then what he did was he planted doubt in our minds about him and Shelby's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, they're newlyweds, but they're not on the same ship anymore. Maybe there's something going on. And he planted that doubt. And the third thing that actually worked in its favor is I've never read the New Frontier books. So I didn't know if this was in character or not. And I spent that whole chapter saying, it's got to be a setup. It's got to be like a plan from Shelby and Calhoun. But with Shelby, I was like, this does not sound like Shelby. Something's wrong. And I believed it was a setup, but I had a bit of doubt. And I thought, oh my goodness, what if they actually were? And what if they're actually about to go blow up these planets because they're marital spat?
Yeah.
And then as soon as that scene ended, and it's just the two of them being like, all right, we sold it. I was like, woo! Okay, good. It was a plan. I thought it was.
Yeah.
But he had me doubting. He had me wondering everything, which is a good mark of a good writer.
It is. Well, and I mean, I don't remember much except that, like, he's like a warrior in his race,
right.
And he's not the most conventional Starfleet captain. In fact, I want to say it's come to blows between him and Admiral Jellicoe in the past. Like, I just have this vision in my mind of like them fighting, but I know that Jellicoe kind of hates him, but also respects him as a captain in his own way. And, you know, Calhoun he's just a maverick, you know? And so like, even as I was reading that scene, I was like, oh crap. I mean, like, I feel like Sisko did that once where he like threatened to blow up a planet, or the question, I guess, with Sisko was he actually going to do it or not? And like, in this case, like, you know, even if you do know Calhoun's history, you might think there may be a chance that he's going to go, you know, blow up this planet, make it uninhabitable or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It was really well done, especially, you know, as you're from the point of view, I think, from the little girl, and seeing getting her thoughts of it, and just you know, her world's been turned upside down. Now you got these, you know, adults around her that are supposed to be there to help them, but they're also bickering and threatening to blow up each other's planets. And You know, she's, you know,
and I don't think she was in on it.
No,
I think they even said she was like purposefully not because they wanted her to sell it.
Yeah. And I can't remember if this
man, that's tough.
Yeah. Is this, this I think was before we found out too, that she was kind of influenced by the mind meld. So, you know, we didn't even know that at the time, but even without the mind meld, I feel like everything she had experienced with the murders of her family that she actually like literally watched and watched some of her own people kill members of her family.
Right.
You know, she had to grow up very fast, you know, to be able to lead this planet.
That was a great argument that the doctor made, which was regarding the mind meld, where the doctor said, look, she was going to have to, she had her innocence and her like childlike wonder and stuff taken from her with this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The mind meld simply brought her back from the precipice and established that she can now lead her people, which she needs to. It's like, it stinks that she's not going to act like a child, get to be a little girl anymore. But, oh well, like that ship was going to sail.
Yeah.
And, of course, this line, of course, has multiple meanings in Star Trek, but like the whole needs of the many thing.
Mm.
It's like, yes, sometimes you do want to focus on the needs of the one or the few, but this is an example of, look, we gotta get this girl in line because she's the one that can bring the errands to the table, and she's the one that can actually potentially stop this war. So it might not be pretty having to do this mind meld. It might not be pretty having to deal with this, but we gotta get her in. So I was like, you know what? I understand the arguments on both sides. I think, you know, I agree with the doctor it was necessary, but I'm like, you know what? I understand where Calhoun's concern for the girl was coming from.
Yeah. Without that mind meld, it's not even that she lost her childhood. She might have lost her life, like just being a vegetable. I mean, she was just in, you know, a catatonic state. Mm-hmm. And she was so deep in it that actually Salita had to come into the mind meld too, because the other doctor that was monitoring Dr. Salar was concerned that Salar was, you know, having difficulties and maybe not able to like even break away from it. And so like Salita then had to come in, which is probably good because, you know, we got a glimpse in this book. It was kind of a blink and you miss it, where Salita says something about being half Romulan.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that.
You know, so I think having and Dr. Salar is just like so Vulcan. I feel like there was some emotion from her though. Like, I don't know if there was something from a previous book or like, I got the impression that there was some emotion there, like that she has trouble suppressing. But then when you bring in Salita, who is half Romulan, so a little bit more leaning into emotions, was probably good for this girl because she's not a completely logical race without emotions. And, you know, you wouldn't want her turning into a Vulcan just from this mind meld. And so, you know, I think it helped her grow up in kind of like all the best ways and, you know, be able to have the emotional maturity, you know, because she's still obviously very upset about everything in her family and every, you know, whatever, but like, but able to really, you know, pull up her sleeves and, you know, get down to work if that's what needs to be done.
And there was that one line where they were like, well, we could send her to Vulcan where we can try to reverse this and fix it. And he's like, great, how long will that take? And they're like, 7 years. And it's like, at that point, she's going to be an adult anyway. What's the point?
Right, yeah, of course it's got to take that long.
But you mentioning how, you know, Salar is so so Vulcan, and then the other one being like a half Romulan, it reminded me of the SpongeBob meme where they're like, what are we ordering today? I'll have someone who's a very Vulcan, but another character who's half Romulan. Daring today, aren't we? Like, it must be, that happens a lot of half Romulans in Star Trek.
Star Trek. Yeah, there are.
Not as many full Romulans, but a lot of half.
Yes. But it's always like half Vulcan, half Romulan.
Half Vulcan, half Romulan. Yeah, it's never half human, half Romulan.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm still not sure how I felt about in this book was kind of how, at least the storyline with the Aarons and the Markanians ended by taking them to, I think it was like Sin Ke is the name of the planet.
Yeah.
Like the Holy Land. You know, Calhoun and Shelby say, okay, we'll take each of your leaders to this planet so you can see it for yourself and put feet on it and see what you're fighting for.
Yeah.
And the fact that the planet had basically lost its most of its atmosphere is inhospitable. Like, they can't live there anymore. It was almost a little too clean, I guess, of an ending. You know, because, like, that's just not... I mean, I don't know how they could have ended the book going, well, they're just still in the state of war forever because this planet's still here that they want. You know, they kind of have to tie a bow around it. But this just kind of made the leaders from the two planets, like, there was nothing to do but say, like, okay, we got to start negotiating and figure out how to, like, stop these tensions between us.
It actually would have been, I think, a smart move on Calhoun's part to, instead of threatening to destroy each of their planets, to be like, all right, you know what? Solomon cutting the baby in half. We're gonna blow up the holy planet.
Yeah,
and make up. We'll be the bad guy.
Yeah, we'll phaser it in half, and you can each have.
Yeah, phaser it in half exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been funny. But like, I do agree it was kind of a clean ending. But I think it was because he needed to wrap up the Aaron Markian storyline because he had to get Shelby and Calhoun through the gateway.
Yeah.
Because there had to be the captain of the ship going through a gateway at the end of the book, like all these do. And every single one, I think, well, maybe not everyone, but a lot of these, the books have literally ended with the line, not knowing what lay beyond.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, you're laying it on thick with that title.
Everyone has, whether it's not, I think in the last few books, it's been the very last line. Like they went through, they stepped through the gateway, not knowing what lay beyond. I think in the first two books,
I think the first two was a little bit different.
Yeah, it was a little bit different. It was a little earlier. You know, there was like an epilogue chapter or something, but like there was like not right at the end. But I mean, it's like part of me almost wondered, was it originally going to be called What Lay Beyond, like the whole series? And then they decided like maybe let's like make that the final book or something. But
oh, I would love to know if they were all told you're building to what lay beyond, and then every author had the same idea, and then nobody addressed it and said, "Yeah, these are all the same, but it's too late; they're already going to print." So
yeah, it's a nice way to tie them all together, I guess.
Right? But, yeah, it works. Yeah.
And I think and what's weird too is like, so Shelby and Calhoun chased I can't remember the guy's name, but he was like supposed to be the bodyguard for the girl. But he was the one that killed her brothers. But he is like, and I think this happened in also the first two books where they were like basically chasing someone through the gateways. And that's how they disappeared. Yep. I think in like Voyager, she just, maybe they all were. Anyway,
but in Voyager, she had to go check to make sure something about it with the dog.
With the dog, yeah. But in this one, that guy runs through, and then they chase after him, and then that guy ends up dying pretty quick on the other side because it's like a frozen wasteland. And Shelby's at death's door, and Calhoun basically picks her up, just like we see on the cover of the book, and carries her because he finds another gateway that they go through. But I imagine they're not going to kill off Shelby in this book. I think she was alive, like very much alive by the end, but still close to death. But we'll see. Mm-hmm. Never know. Mm-hmm. Never know with Peter David and these like original books.
we are all scarred after Before Dishonor.
Yes, well.
We can never trust him on that again.
I know. Well. But yeah, I mean, like at the end of this, like we've got left is what lay beyond. I mean, we get to find out what happens to everybody. And so interestingly, I'll say is in both this book and I mean, the Voyager book, you know, there was a struggle there to get the gateways really used. And we did not meet any of the quote unquote Iconians in that one.
No, we didn't.
This one, and I guess we haven't really talked about it much, but those two Smiths that had these portable gateways, we do find out that they are from basically like an alternate universe dimension something, and they work for something that they refer to as the giant, something like that, you know. And so I'm now wondering, were these even Petra, who we know are behind, at least in the Next Generation Deep Space Nine books, and even the early ones,
the early ones,
I don't know. you know, are they part of that, or are they something else being used? Or is the quote unquote giant Petra, or, you know, what are we going to find? But yeah, I'm hopeful we get some good conclusions next time.
I'm curious how we'll do the podcast next time, because I don't think we've done, at least not together, a short story collection before.
So, yeah, I don't think I have since I've been on here either. I'm trying to think if
we'll figure it out. But
yeah, I mean, we're going to have to talk about each of them. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, until then, like, you have any final thoughts, anything we didn't talk about? And what'd you rate this one?
What I'll say is, so this is kind of funny. This is possibly tied for my favorite book in the series.
Yeah.
My favorite has been this third book, the Next Gen book by Greenberger. I think this is almost on that level of entertaining. That book was like epic because it was big and galaxy spanning and all that stuff. This one just had such a good story and such good characters and such good just everything that I just loved it. Despite the spicy stuff in there. But I still really enjoyed it. And we didn't even talk about Moress and the whole allegations thing. Oh, that was a nice. I really enjoyed this one. So we always do it out of 5, because when I rate things personally, I do it out of 10. So out of 5, I'd give it 4.5 out of 5, because I really, really had a blast reading this book. And it makes me want to go and read the other New Frontier books, but I can't do it because I have other books on the shelf first.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm right there with you. I also would give this one a 4.5 out of 5. It's just... you know, I had a hard time getting into it just because I've been in the process of moving and everything. So just didn't have a lot of time to read. But once I kind of got settled in and actually sat down, man, I flew through this book. It was engaging. And like I said, there's things that could have been lifted out of it. But I think if I were reading this in the fuller context of the New Frontier books in general, this would be just an excellent book. Like I don't think it would be out of place being, you know, just like the gateways, you know, part of it being like it. I would imagine that it just fits really nicely into that whole series. And yeah, like you, I'm kind of excited. Like I need to start collecting the books again and reading them. And the first 4 are very short, you know, they're almost like novellas. Yeah. So you know, you can get through those pretty quick, but yeah, I mean, this book kind of does what you want any book in a series to do, is get you to want to pick up more of them. And I think this one just nailed it. And yeah, I would say this is probably, I mean, I really liked the Deep Space Nine book, but also, you know, the Next Gen one was also very good. I mean, this one, they're all neck and neck for me right now.
Right, yeah.
These three.
Yeah, I would put like Next Gen would be a solid, you know, after these two, but it's still really, really good.
Yeah.
I think that's the leaderboard. And then Voyager was fun. The only reason it worked so well for me was because of the character work, because it felt like it was, because Christy Golden and Kirsten Beyer just get the Voyager characters.
Yeah.
So even if the book's bad, it works.
Yep.
That's why that one worked. And then we have the first two books. One of my favorite moments from a book reviewer online, Daniel Green, is he said regarding the Name of the Wind duology, it's two books that are out now. He said, "I was too harsh on the first book. I was not harsh enough on the second book." Unfortunately, I was not harsh enough on the first two, because I was very nice on them and do not have good memories. But 3 through 6, great run.
Yeah.
So if hopefully 7 is good. Hopefully we don't have bookends.
Yeah, well, no, hopefully not. I don't think so, because, I mean, even it'll be nice even getting conclusions to those first two stories. And
if I can remember them.
That'll be an interesting, you know, like, we'll have to kind of put a pin in that and try to remember that for next time. Like, how well did these, because, I mean, like we talked about for this book, is that it did a really good job catching us up for what we needed to know about New Frontier and everything.
Right.
Like, do these short stories, I mean, like, this is 4 months. Like, I mean, I think they release 2 books a month. So this is potentially 3 or 4 months after you might have read the first book. And for us, it's even longer, since we've been going through these one a month. I'm kind of curious to see, one, how well they do, like, kind of reminding us of these stories that they're concluding, but also, too, how well do they tie everything together, including the original series and Challenger stories?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. I guess that's next time. Well, yeah, we've, you know, it's always crazy when we're getting this close to the end of a series, too, and, you know, we've got a lot of good stuff on the slate. Like we said in the news section, we've got a lot of great new books coming up. Well, I'm assuming they're great because they're great authors. But
yeah,
we'll do the last book in the Gateways next time. What lay beyond? So keep our fingers crossed that we like that one. But until next time, Jonathan, why don't you tell people where they can find you?
You can find me on YouTube at Jonathan Cohn. You can find my Twitter at Jonathan Cohn and my Goodreads at Jonathan Cohn. Those are the three primary places you can find me. And if you need other links, they are included in those three places.
And you can find me on Goodreads and Letterboxd at Knitting Trekkie. And you can also find me just poking around in the Babel Conference on Facebook or other Star Trek book groups on Facebook. And that's about it, I guess, for this time. And until next time, thanks everyone for listening. And until next time, live long.
And read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.